Welcome, everyone. Nice to see some new faces and repeaters. It's always fun to get together. This evening, we are going to be... Well, let me introduce myself, because there are a couple of people that may not know who I am. My name is Mary. Welcome. I'm a mystic. I hear somebody. Come on in. The water's great.
Someone else is coming on too.
Okay, I'll wait. Thank you. Now that we have daylight, it's like it takes a little bit longer just to get... Oh, here's our Peggy.
Oh,
Peggy nice. Just got back in town. Hey, darling, come on in. You cannot come in without a little hug. Okay, I'll start again. Hello, everyone. Glad we get together this evening. My name is Mary. I'm a mystic. I had my first mystical experience when I was 6 years old and have had them ever since throughout my life. As a result of having a mystical experience, my experience was that I entered into union and communion with the divine, which meant that there was no separation between the divine and myself. And as a result of that, I have the voice within. And the voice within is very different than the voice of the ego. The voice of the ego is always chatting, telling stories, and trying to occupy you while you're doing whatever you're doing. Does everybody know what that little voice is? Oh, good. Okay. The other voice, on the other hand, of the divine, has a very different aspect of energy. And for me, the divine is talking to me all the time. And so I have this really interesting conversation going on. And often I will have to say to my ego conscious mind, I need you to be quiet now, because I really want to hear what the divine has to say. And often there will be that quiet, and then I will hear more and more. I also have a practice of sitting in silence, which means I've learned to quiet my ego conscious mind and simply to open and to hear whatever the divine is bringing through at that moment or during that time. In our gatherings last week, we were talking about the four lower bodies, your physical, your emotional, your mental, and your spiritual bodies. And we were working with two of them last week, which was the physical body and the emotional body. And one of the things that I brought forward was the beliefs that we were given as children. And many of those beliefs, they were both positive and negative beliefs, but we were literally imprinted with those beliefs. And so last week we talked about and shared beliefs that we had that were given to us around our physical body and beliefs that we had around our emotional body. And this evening we're going to be talking about the mental body and the spiritual body. So I wanted to read to you from this wonderful book, and if any of you have a chance to buy it, please do. It's called Love Poems from God, and these are all mystics from all different points of view and over the centuries, men and women. So each one speaks their truth in the most beautiful and poetic way. So I wanted to begin with Rabia, an extraordinary woman who lived from 1717 to 801. I'm sure we all had embodiments during that time. That's a joke. You can laugh. Thank you. She had a very hard life. She was sexually abused for many years and probably was in a brothel or whatever they called it during that time. And probably she was freed by someone who honored the great consciousness that she carried. And so she was bought out of that slavery and she began to write. And her writings are so very beautiful. Love is the perfect stillness. It is the greatest excitement and the most profound act, and the word almost as complete as God's name. This is also by Rabia. In my soul, there is a temple, a shrine, a mosque, a church, where I kneel. Prayer should bring us to an altar where no walls or names exist. Is there not a region of love where the sovereignty is illuminated nothing, where ecstasy gets poured into itself and becomes lost, where the wing is fully alive but has no mind or body? In my soul, there is a temple, a shrine, a mosque, a church that dissolves in God. Come on in. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have a place just for you. Hi, darling. So I wanted to begin by talking a little bit about the beliefs that we have in our mental body and in our spiritual body. And often, as we are as children, and my father used to say, of all my children, you ask more questions than any other child. You're just always asking the question and wanting the answer. And the ego conscious mind is very much like that. It is very restless. It wants information, and it is avarice, which means that it wants to grab as much information as it can, because then it feels powerful, because it has enough information that it can probably answer whatever question it might want to answer inside itself. So if you are addicted to reading the newspaper, or addicted to the internet and all the information on it, or if you are striving to get more information, then guess what part of the brain is really interested in that? It's the left side of the brain, and it's your ego, and it wants what it wants when it wants it. So it has the ability to just take endless amounts of information, and often the information the next day is old information, right? In the times we live. And so that which you perceived as being an important little tidbit of information that you received might the next day have no meaning, because something else will have taken its place. So if we are consumed by the need to have more information, then there is very little room for what's happening on the right side of our brain, which is where the divine, and where we as divine beings can have union and communion with our soul. And our soul is this absolute love. It is the divine made manifest in us. So when we look at our beliefs in our mental body, it is important for us to honor the beliefs that came through both our mother and father, both negative and positive. And then there is the family entity, which is a much larger level of energy, which encompasses every ancestor that we've ever had. All those beliefs, and some of them are pretty heavy duty, because we have had many experiences, not only in this lifetime, but we're also experiencing what our parents, what our grandparents, what our aunts, what our uncles, our nieces, our nephews, all of their experiences are in this huge family entity. And often there will be someone who remembers all the stories from way back when. And they'll bring them forward when we're all gathered together. And I grew up in a family where most of my relatives were either in South America or Canada or in England. And so my mother was the carrier of that energy. And as a result, she would tell us the stories and we'd go, yeah, 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 Ma. You know, we had very little interest in what happened way back then. We were so interested in the present moment. And yet, that is all part of the family entity that we experience. And then, what are those beliefs that we have been given and are so strong within our mental body that sometimes we even forget they're there. So I had a lot of fun writing down some of the beliefs that I had been given as a child. And some of them may resonate with you. I have no idea, but we'll see. You will reap what you sow. There's never enough time. All work is noble. Like father, like son, like daughter, like mother. Children are seen but not heard. Never say never. Speak only when spoken to. A penny saved is a penny earned. Waste not, want not. A word to the wise is sufficient. Seeing is believing. Never count your chickens before they hatch. Has anyone ever heard that one? Nod your heads up and down if you have. Thank you very much. Okay. And here's another one. Never judge a book by its cover. Yes, indeedy. Okay. Now, those are just a few of the ones that I was given. Do any of those sound familiar to any of us? Oh, my goodness, yes. And sometimes, as we grow and mature, we say, well, I'm going to let go of that one. You know, that doesn't serve me any longer. And some of them, of these beliefs, are like laws. And as we grow and mature, sometimes we have to actually break the law. When I went to New York to dance, suddenly all these laws began to rise up because I wasn't going to live the life that I, quote unquote, was taught that I would be living. And I realized if I go down this path, then I will be breaking many of the laws of my family. Because all of them, it was about being in business and being successful, and it had to look like this and that and the other. And, you know, I didn't care about any of that. I said, you know, that doesn't have any meaning for me at all whatsoever. I had to create a whole set of new beliefs around who I was and how I was and how I'd be in the world. And if you're sitting in this room, you have already moved from the place of some of your beliefs to get into this room. You've had to let something go to get here. You can't just stay in that energy that has been passed down that was considered almost like the Holy Grail. I mean, you know, here are the laws, and this is what you do, and here are the beliefs, and this is what you need to believe. And I had to say, well, here's a belief, and I have to let it go. And what was there a belief that would come in to take its place? Or was that a place within me where I said, I don't even need a belief. It is not for me that I have to believe something in order to be who I truly am. Now, the beliefs that serve us, the ones where we say, this is a belief that really serves me. I have a deep belief in God that serves me. This is real. God is not some ephemeral, you know, something out there. God is absolutely real to me. And my relationship with God is very real. But often, if I were to express that to someone, they would think that I was a heretic. And I've been a heretic many times, darling. And maybe some of y'all have too. So, we know that there is a letting go and then an infilling of energy. We have both going on often, every single day of our lives. Is this a decision that will serve me in this moment? Is this a belief that will help me to get where I want to go? Or do I have to simply let that go and allow something new to come in? So this evening, what I'd like to do, and part of what we did last week, is to go around the room, and if everybody would just think about one belief, just one belief that they have, that they're still either coming from their family or a belief that is new for them. Okay? Very simple and very easy. So I'm going to start with Preneet.
I was going to say two, but you insist on one. Yeah, just so one. Come with one.
But you could give one to someone else if they don't have one. Since you have two.
The mental body.
Mental body. Mental body. Mm-hmm. Not yet. We're going to get there.
I think the one that comes right on top for me was always told to take as much as I can consume and never waste.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think of any right.
All right, okay. Okay.
Mary?
Yes.
Would you mind defining mental?
The mental body? That is your brain and how you think, what you do think and don't think. And
so
you have
sort of like an intellectual.
Right. So you have two halves. You have a belief that is from the left side of the brain, which is the ego, conscious mind, and on the right side of the brain are the beliefs that you have around soul, or God, or the divine.
So is this a belief that I'm still believing?
Mm-hmm. Or one that you said I no longer, if it's a belief you no longer believe.
Oh.
It can be either one, because we all have things that we don't believe any longer. I mean, I don't believe in Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy. I mean, you know, I don't believe in those anymore. I've come a little bit beyond that. But you understand, I'm making a little joke. But, you know, there are beliefs that we held so closely, and then when we let them go, how did that feel? Usually it feels very good to let it go.
I think never say never.
Never say never.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm. Something's gone up for me today. It's been, you know, my life for a long time. I'm ready to let go. Is I need to be perfect. I need to be perfectly. So I need to wait until I get to the perfect stage. Really.
Excellent.
It really doesn't work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stand up straight.
Okay.
Always go 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Not being good enough.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Finish everything you've started.
Work hard all the time.
Mm-hmm. I know that one.
We're survivors.
There's not enough time to get everything done. I think the children should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
Carried that into my adult life too.
Mm-hmm.
Do unto others as you want others to do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
My worth is based in what I accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
There are no quitters in our family.
Oh, that's a good one. Yipes. And a lot of these, of course, can be very confining rather than expanding. And I was, again, you know, it has to be done perfectly. I mean, every single one that was said here, I hope everybody nodded inside themselves, yes, I know that one quite well, because we're always, many of these things are both cultural as well as being inculcated within each of our families. And it doesn't make any difference, usually, what the culture is, what the country is. I mean, if we had someone from every country around the world in this room, they would probably, in their language, say exactly the things that we're saying in this room. That's how deeply entrenched within the collective consciousness of humanity. Right? Now, the one thing that didn't come up was war, or arguing, or fighting, or bickering. None of that was allowed in our family. We had to do it on our own with our siblings, far away from mom and dad. And of course, it always happened, you know? We would bicker and fight and yeah. And because we learned as children that if we did that, you know, not a good scene. So we learned how to be, how to do those kinds of beliefs, you know? The one-upsmanship and the, you know, putting that person down and all those awful things that siblings do to one another. I hope some of you had siblings and you can nod your head up and down, because I certainly went through that.
Yeah.
And now we're all speaking to each other, which is quite marvelous. Thank you. Okay, so if you see what I'm getting at in terms of how the beliefs work deeply within us and how the beliefs that we have, some we can let go, and others we say, this is a belief that I want to hold. This is a belief that works for me. And so it becomes part of who we are and the way we are in the world. Now, in spiritual body and spiritual beliefs, and your spiritual body is the divine in its full magnificence, and then the divine expressing through our souls into and through who we are. Your soul is in every single cell of your body. Your soul is coming out through your eyes. Your soul is illuminating your mind, and that is the mind, not the brain. And it can illuminate the brain as well, but that's a little bit, it's a different subject for then tonight. So when we have spiritual beliefs, often it has come through the religion or the faith or the consciousness in which you were raised. And sometimes you move away from that, sometimes you expand that, sometimes you bring in different levels of energy into your spiritual consciousness, which is a very large and extraordinary level of energy. And one of the reasons that there are, as this poem said, churches and mosques and temples and all these wonderful places is the diversity that has been revealed by beloved individuals who've come to the earth plane and brought certain teachings with them. And part of that was to establish a particular flow of energy within the spirituality of the consciousness. So when you look at each of the religions that are upon the earth plane, and many of them hold such deep truths, and some would say that they're the ones who have God. And I smile and I say, thank you, but you see, I see God over here and over here and over here and over here. I don't see God just in one religion. And I was brought up that if we've lived our life in a very, how shall I say, loving and fully conscious manner, that love would be returned to us. If I give love, I will receive love. And if I didn't receive love, then I was to honor that the individual or whatever situation I found myself in, that this wasn't the one that I would receive love from. But I did not turn away from them. I simply acknowledged that and said, then I am with this person for some other reason than to give and receive love. And I will be in their presence until I discover what that is. So spiritual beliefs can be very strong and narrow and very wide and all-encompassing and everything in between. So here are some of the spiritual beliefs in my spiritual body that I grew up with. God exists. God is love. There is such a thing as heaven. You create your own hell. Love thy neighbor as thyself, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. One good deed deserves another. So in our relationship with our spiritual body, we have the opportunity to expand our awareness so that it goes way beyond what we grew up with. I want to acknowledge my mother, who was the Church of England, and my father, who grew up in Southern Methodist, which was close to Southern Baptist. And when the two of them met and fell in love, and they wanted to have children, and they told us about their discussion that they had about what would we do about faith, what would we do about faith. And my mom and dad, both of them had a great sense of humor, they would go and visit various churches wherever we lived, and we lived in a number of places. And it was always about what was the love and what was the music. My mom and dad love music. And they said, you know, if we're not hearing some really good music, maybe this is where we need to be on Sunday morning, you know? Because they really felt that the music was an outpouring of this wonderful God presence, you know? And eventually they found a church and they had a wonderful choir. And honey, when they would sing, it was just like, you just couldn't believe it, you know? It was just fantastic. And talk about, for me, it was when I really felt the spirit. I felt the spirit of the energy, and it was just extraordinary. So we each have our own place of worship. Sometimes it is in a mosque or a cathedral or a church or wherever it happens to be. And sometimes it is within that sacred place within us, which is our heart. And often when I have been on the road for years and years and years, I would be dancing in churches. My first experience was when I was living in New York. Welcome, everyone. Nice to see some new faces and repeaters. It's always fun to get together. This evening, we are going to be... Well, let me introduce myself, because there are a couple of people that may not know who I am. My name is Mary. Welcome. I'm a mystic. I hear somebody. Come on in. The water's great.
Someone else is coming on too.
Okay, I'll wait. Thank you. Now that we have daylight, it's like it takes a little bit longer just to get... Oh, here's our Peggy.
Oh,
Peggy
nice.
Just got back in town. Hey, darling, come on in. You cannot come in without a little hug. Okay, I'll start again. Hello, everyone. Glad we could get together this evening. My name is Mary. I'm a mystic. I had my first mystical experience when I was 6 years old and have had them ever since throughout my life. As a result of having a mystical experience, my experience was that I entered into union and communion with the divine, which meant that there was no separation between the divine and myself. And as a result of that, I have the voice within. And the voice within is very different than the voice of the ego. The voice of the ego is always chatting, telling stories, and trying to occupy you while you're doing whatever you're doing. Does everybody know what that little voice is? Oh, good. Okay. The other voice, on the other hand, of the divine, has a very different aspect of energy. And for me, the divine is talking to me all the time. And so I have this really interesting conversation going on. And often I will have to say to my ego conscious mind, I need you to be quiet now because I really want to hear what the divine has to say. And often there will be that quiet, and then I will hear more and more. I also have a practice of sitting in silence, which means I've learned to quiet my ego conscious mind and simply to open and to hear whatever the divine is bringing through at that moment or during that time. In our gatherings last week, we were talking about the four lower bodies, your physical, your emotional, your mental, and your spiritual bodies. And we were working with two of them last week, which was the physical body and the emotional body. And one of the things that I brought forward was the beliefs that we were given as children. And many of those beliefs, they were both positive and negative beliefs, but we were literally imprinted with those beliefs. And so last week we talked about and shared beliefs that we had that were given to us around our physical body and beliefs that we had around our emotional body. And this evening we're going to be talking about the mental body and the spiritual body. So I wanted to read to you from this wonderful book, and if any of you have a chance to buy it, please do. It's called Love Poems from God, and these are all mystics from all different points of view and over the centuries, men and women. So each one speaks their truth in the most beautiful and poetic way. So I wanted to begin with Rabia, an extraordinary woman who lived from 1717 to 801. I'm sure we all had embodiments during that time. That's a joke. You can laugh. Thank you. She had a very hard life. She was sexually abused for many years and probably was in a brothel or whatever they called it during that time. And probably she was freed by someone who honored the great consciousness that she carried And so she was bought out of that slavery, and she began to write. And her writings are so very beautiful. Love is the perfect stillness. It is the greatest excitement and the most profound act. And the word almost as complete as God's name. This is also by Rabia. In my soul, there is a temple, a shrine, a mosque, a church, where I kneel. Prayer should bring us to an altar where no walls or names exist. Is there not a region of love where the sovereignty is illuminated nothing, where ecstasy gets poured into itself and becomes lost? Where the wing is fully alive, but has no mind or body? In my soul, there is a temple, a shrine, a mosque, a church that dissolves in God. Come on in. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have a place just for you. Hi, darling. So I wanted to begin by talking a little bit about the beliefs that we have in our mental body and in our spiritual body. And often, as we are as children, and my father used to say, of all my children, you ask more questions than any other child. You're just always asking the question and wanting the answer. And the ego conscious mind is very much like that. It is very restless. It wants information. And it is avarice, which means that it wants to grab as much information as it can, because then it feels powerful, because it has enough information that it can probably answer whatever question it might want to answer inside itself. So if you are addicted to reading the newspaper, or addicted to the internet and all the information on it, or if you are striving to get more information, then guess what part of the brain is really interested in that? It's the left side of the brain, and it's your ego, and it wants what it wants when it wants it. So it has the ability to just take endless amounts of information. And often the information the next day is old information, right? In the times we live. And so that which you perceived as being an important little tidbit of information that you received might the next day have no meaning, because something else will have taken its place. So if we are consumed by the need to have more information, then there is very little room for what's happening on the right side of our brain, which is where the divine and where we as divine beings can have union and communion with our soul. And our soul is this absolute love. It is the divine made manifest in us. So when we look at our beliefs in our mental body, it is important for us to honor the beliefs that came through both our mother and father, both negative and positive. And then there is the family entity, which is a much larger level of energy, which encompasses every ancestor that we've ever had. All those beliefs. And some of them are pretty heavy duty, because we have had many experiences, not only in this lifetime, but we're also experiencing what our parents, what our grandparents, what our aunts, what our uncles, our nieces, our nephews, all of their experiences are in this huge family entity. And often there will be someone who remembers all the stories from way back when. And they'll bring them forward when we're all gathered together. And I grew up in a family where most of my relatives were either in South America or Canada or in England. And so my mother was the carrier of that energy. And as a result, she would tell us the stories and we'd go, yeah, 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 Ma. You know, we had very little interest in what happened way back then. We were so interested in the present moment. And yet, that is all part of the family entity that we experience. And then, what are those beliefs that we have been given and are so strong within our mental body that sometimes we even forget they're there? So I had a lot of fun writing down some of the beliefs that I had been given as a child. And some of them may resonate with you. I have no idea, but we'll see. You will reap what you sow. There is never enough time. All work is noble. Like father, like son, like daughter, like mother. Children are seen but not heard. Never say never. Speak only when spoken to. A penny saved is a penny earned. Waste not, want not. A word to the wise is sufficient. Seeing is believing. Never count your chickens before they hatch. Has anyone ever heard that one? Nod your heads up and down if you have. Thank you very much. Okay. And here's another one. Never judge a book by its cover. Oh, yes, indeedy. Okay. Now, those are just a few of the ones that I was given. Do any of those sound familiar to any of us? Oh, my goodness, yes. And sometimes, as we grow and mature, we say, well, I'm going to let go of that one. You know, that doesn't serve me any longer. And some of them, of these beliefs, are like laws. And as we grow and mature, sometimes we have to actually break the law. When I went to New York to dance, suddenly all these laws began to rise up because I wasn't going to live the life that I, quote unquote, was taught that I would be living. And I realized if I go down this path, then I will be breaking many of the laws of my family. Because all of them, it was about being in business and being successful, and it had to look like this and that and the other. And, you know, I didn't care about any of that. I said, you know, that doesn't have any meaning for me at all whatsoever. I had to create a whole set of new beliefs around who I was and how I was and how I'd be in the world. And if you're sitting in this room, you have already moved from the place of some of your beliefs to get into this room. You've had to let something go to get here. You can't just stay in that energy that has been passed down that was considered almost like the Holy Grail. I mean, you know, here are the laws, and this is what you do, and here are the beliefs, and this is what you need to believe. And I had to say, well, here's a belief, and I have to let it go. And what was there a belief that would come in to take its place? Or was that a place within me where I said, I don't even need a belief. It is not for me that I have to believe something in order to be who I truly am. Now, the beliefs that serve us, the ones where we say, this is a belief that really serves me. I have a deep belief in God that serves me. This is real. God is not some ephemeral, you know, something out there. God is absolutely real to me. And my relationship with God is very real. But often, if I were to express that to someone, they would think that I was a heretic. And I've been a heretic many times, darling. And maybe some of y'all have too. So, we know that there is a letting go and then an infilling of energy. We have both going on often, every single day of our lives. Is this a decision that will serve me in this moment? Is this a belief that will help me to get where I want to go? Or do I have to simply let that go and allow something new to come in? So this evening, what I'd like to do, and part of what we did last week, is to go around the room, and if everybody would just think about one belief, just one belief that they have, that they're still either coming from their family or a belief that is new for them. Okay? Very simple and very easy. So I'm going to start with Preneet.
I was going to say two, but you insist on one, so I'll come with one.
But you could give one to someone else if they don't have one, since you have two.
The mental body.
Mental body. Not yet. We're going to get there.
I think the one that comes right on top for me was always told to take as much as I can consume and never waste.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think of any
right. All right, okay. Okay.
Mary?
Yes.
Would you mind defining mental?
The mental body? That is your brain and how you think. What you do think and don't think. And
so
you have,
it's like an intellectual.
Right. So you have two halves.
Belief.
You have a belief that is from the left side of the brain, which is the ego, conscious mind, and on the right side of the brain are the beliefs that you have around soul, or God, or the divine.
So is this a belief that I'm still believing?
Mm-hmm. Or one that you said I no longer, if it's a belief you no longer believe.
Oh.
It can be either one, because we all have things we don't believe any longer. I mean, I don't believe in Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy. I mean, you know, I don't believe in those anymore. I've come a little bit beyond that. But you understand, I'm making a little joke. But, you know, there are beliefs that we held so closely, and then when we let them go, how did that feel? Usually it feels very good to let it go.
I think never say never.
Never say never.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Good.
Mm-hmm. Something's gone up for me today. It's been, you know, my life for a long time. I'm ready to let go. Is I need to be perfect. I need to be perfectly, so I need to wait until I get to the perfect stage. Really.
Excellent.
It doesn't, really doesn't work. Thank you.
Stand up straight.
Okay.
Always go 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Not being good enough.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Finish everything you've started.
Mm.
Work hard all the time.
Mm-hmm. I know that one.
We're survivors.
Mm.
There's not enough time to get everything done.
Mm.
I think the children should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
Carry that into my adult life too.
Mm-hmm.
Do unto others as you want others to do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
My worth is based in what I accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
There are no quitters in our family.
Oh, that's a good one. Yipes. And a lot of these, of course, can be very confining rather than expanding. And I was, again, you know, it has to be done perfectly. I mean, every single one that was said here, I hope everybody nodded inside themselves, yes, I know that one quite well, because we're always, many of these things are both cultural as well as being inculcated within each of our families. And it doesn't make any difference, usually, what the culture is, what the country is. I mean, if we had someone from every country around the world in this room, they would probably, in their language, say exactly the things that we're saying in this room. That's how deeply entrenched within the collective consciousness of humanity. Right? Now, the one thing that didn't come up was war, or arguing, or fighting, or bickering. None of that was allowed in our family. We had to do it on our own with our siblings, far away from mom and dad. And of course, it always happened, you know? We would bicker and fight and yeah. And because we learned as children that if we did that, you know, not a good scene. So we learned how to be, how to do those kinds of beliefs, you know? The one-upsmanship and the, you know, putting that person down and all those awful things that siblings do to one another. I hope some of you had siblings and you can nod your head up and down because I certainly went through that.
Yeah.
And now we're all speaking to each other, which is quite marvelous. Thank you. Okay, so if you see what I'm getting at in terms of how the beliefs work deeply within us and how the beliefs that we have, some we can let go, and others, we say, this is a belief that I want to hold. This is a belief that works for me. And so it becomes part of who we are and the way we are in the world. Now, in spiritual body and spiritual beliefs, and your spiritual body is the divine in its full magnificence, and then the divine expressing through our souls into and through who we are. Your soul is in every single cell of your body. Your soul is coming out through your eyes. Your soul is illuminating your mind, and that is the mind, not the brain. And it can illuminate the brain as well, but that's a little bit, it's a different subject for then tonight. So when we have spiritual beliefs, often it has come through the religion or the faith or the consciousness in which you were raised. And sometimes you move away from that, sometimes you expand that, sometimes you bring in different levels of energy into your spiritual consciousness, which is a very large and extraordinary level of energy. And one of the reasons that there are, as this poem said, churches and mosques and temples and all these wonderful places is the diversity that has been revealed by beloved individuals who've come to the earth plane and brought certain teachings with them. And part of that was to establish a particular flow of energy within the spirituality of the consciousness. So when you look at each of the religions that are upon the earth plane, and many of them hold such deep truths, and some would say that they're the ones who have God. And I smile and I say, thank you, but you see, I see God over here and over here and over here and over here. I don't see God just in one religion. And I was brought up that if we've lived our life in a very, loving and fully conscious manner, that love would be returned to us. If I give love, I will receive love. And if I didn't receive love, then I was to honor that the individual or whatever situation I found myself in, that this wasn't the one that I would receive love from. But I did not turn away from them. I simply acknowledged that and said, then I am with this person for some other reason than to give and receive love. And I will be in their presence until I discover what that is. So spiritual beliefs can be very strong and narrow and very wide and all-encompassing and everything in between. So here are some of the spiritual beliefs in my spiritual body that I grew up with. God exists. God is love. There is such a thing as heaven. You create your own hell. Love thy neighbor as thyself, and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. One good deed deserves another. So in our relationship with our spiritual body, we have the opportunity to expand our awareness so that it goes way beyond what we grew up with. I want to acknowledge my mother, who was the Church of England, and my father, who grew up in Southern Methodist, which was close to Southern Baptist. And when the two of them met and fell in love, and they wanted to have children, and they told us about their discussion that they had about what would we do about faith, what would we do about faith. And my mom and dad, both of them had a great sense of humor, they would go and visit various churches wherever we lived, and we lived in a number of places. And it was always about what was the love and what was the music. My mom and dad love music. And they said, you know, if we're not hearing some really good music, maybe this is where we need to be on Sunday morning, you know? Because they really felt that the music was an outpouring of this wonderful God presence, you know? And eventually they found a church and they had a wonderful choir. And honey, when they would sing, it was just like, you just couldn't believe it, you know? It was just fantastic. And talk about, for me, it was when I really felt the Spirit. I felt the spirit of the energy, and it was just extraordinary. So we each have our own place of worship Sometimes it is in a mosque or a cathedral or a church or wherever it happens to be. And sometimes it is within that sacred place within us, which is our heart. And often when I have been on the road for years and years and years, I would be dancing in churches. My first experience was when I was living in New York, and it was during the 60s, and everything was cool. And a friend of mine who was a guitar player had been invited to play at this Catholic church down in the village. And he said to the priest there, you know, there's this lady and she loves to dance and she does liturgical dance. She actually dances in the churches. Would you mind if she came and danced in your church? And he said, no, you know, let her come. So I went down to the village and I met the priest and I said, yes, I have a group of dancers and we'd love to dance in the church. And I said, and I just need to tell you that we like to do it in bare feet. And he said, well, most of my congregation is in bare feet, so you don't have a thing to worry about. I went, oh, I think I found the right place. So I would find music that he had used either in his sermons or was something that his congregation really loved. And I said to the dancers, okay, this is what we're going to do. And we had created costumes that were very beautiful. And I said to him, now, is there any place here in the church that you do not want us to dance? Because there might be, you know, a place where you say, no, we don't let people go back there. And he said, actually, no. He said, you can dance anywhere you want to because this is the house of God and God would love you to dance any place you want to dance. I said, fine. And you know, David danced before the Lord. And he said, David danced before the Lord. I said, I know, he's a good friend of mine. So I danced and had all these wonderful experiences. And little by little, I would go to various churches of many different denominations and we would all dance. And then I would invite the congregation, if they wanted to, they could actually begin to feel the presence, you know, in their physical bodies while we were dancing. And many of them said afterwards, it was a very moving and beautiful experience because they had, I mean, in the early days, before there were, you know, edifices, and in the time of Moses and all those wonderful folks, they just had a campground. I mean, you know, it was just everybody there on the earth, and their celebration of who they were was very profound. Every culture has dance in it, every culture. And most of the time, my experience has been that the energies have narrowed so that the dance isn't really considered the holy place within self when we're dancing, because the dance has taken on many different costumes and kinds of dancing. So some of the dancing would be totally inappropriate, whereas others might be more appropriate. So in my journey through this, there came a time in the Catholic Church where the Pope had said that the nuns were no longer to wear the habits, that they were to wear street clothes, and maybe some of you remember that. And it came to pass that one of the women that whose church I'd gone to and danced, and she was a Catholic, she had talked to her Mother Superior, and the Mother Superior said, you know, the women who are going to take off their garb that they have worn for years, and they have not shown their bodies at all, suddenly they're going to have on street clothes as they've never worn before, and they have to figure out what this is all about. And so the Mother Superior said, would you come and just work with these beautiful women on being able to be in touch with their humanity while they're going through this transition? And some of them, you know, they had been 50 and 60 years in the habit, and suddenly they had to take them off and wear what the Pope had said that they were to wear. And I was very honored, and I said, yes, I would love to do that. So when I came in, and they were all there, and they had on what they were now wearing, and I said, if each of you would just take either a psalm or a prayer, psalm or a prayer, and make it short, you can use just a little bit of it if you wish, and allow yourself to create gestures that will represent parts of that psalm or that prayer. And many of them, this is a symbol of prayer, and this is a symbol of prayer. There are many different ways. Kneeling is a symbol of prayer. Crossing oneself is a symbol of prayer. Anointing is a symbol of prayer. There are many different symbols that we have in the way that our bodies have moved through millennium in expressing through our prayers. And so each one of them, then, I said, you know, take a few moments, go in the corner, decide what movements you're going to do to express these prayers. And it was so beautiful. One by one, they came out and they said whatever the prayer or passage was, and then they expressed through their body what that meant to them in the way of prayer, however that prayer might be. And it was so beautiful. And they were extraordinarily inventive. And I realized that within each one of us, no matter what our religion is, or our faith is, or our practice is, that there is this wonderful energy that is waiting to be expressed. And some of us sing it, some of us pray it, some of us meditate it, some of us allow the body to express it. But there are so many different ways that this energy, in music, in poetry, in literature, I mean, it's just everywhere. And to be able to know the sacred and how it's expressing itself in our everyday lives. Now for me, I wake up in the morning and the first thing I say is thank you. And for me, that's a very significant prayer right there. I just say thank you. And I can't wait to get out of bed. As Michelle said, you're like a jack in the box. You duck, duck. You know, you're, hello, I'm here. So that expression of thanks, that expression of knowing that the day has begun and I am one with the day, and however it unfolds, this is a sacred energy. This is a sacred event that is occurring. These moments that I will have on the earth plane, they are very significant. Why? Because I am alive. Mm-hmm. I am alive. And I would not be alive if God hadn't said, there will be life on this planet. And it just happens to look like everybody in this room. We are alive. And to give thanks for that. I mean, every breath. I love these breatharians that say, you know, we're just going to breathe. I say, I'm going to breathe. And I'm going to breathe some more. And then there are folks who say, you know, you only have so many breaths in a lifetime. Have you heard about those folks? You only have so many breaths. I said, well, I think I might overdo my quota because I have a lot of breathing to do, and I want to be able to breathe fully and deeply, and to breathe in spirit, and to breathe out spirit, and to bring spirit into who I am, and to let spirit move through me. And when I meet another, I don't look at them and say, who are you in your humanity? Because I see your humanity. But who are you? Who are you really? How does your soul express through you? How have you touched the divine within yourself today? And how have you touched the divine in the other? And one of the things that I spoke of several weeks ago, Thich Nhat Hanh said, smile. How hard is that? Thank you. 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 That's divine. Every time we look upon another and we smile, the divinity in us reaches to them. And if they decide that they're not going to smile, well, that's perfectly all right. It's not going to change my day, because I know that when I smile, the divinity of that which I am flows from me. The same is true of a gentle touch. If you touch another gently, that is divine. And in that touch, the energy can move mountains. I have been very blessed in this lifetime to touch many people. And many of them have been on death's door, and they have asked me to be with them upon their passing. And I have been able to be with them as the transition is made, and to see how beautiful that is, and to be touching them in the physical as they prepare and then leave. And the same is true. I've never had children of my own, but I was told there are 7 souls who wanted you to be their mom, and you're going to know every single one of them before your life is out. And I have met those 7 souls. And one of them happens to be a member of my family, out of my sister. And when her son and I resonated with each other, of course, I look in, that's what I call it. I look in and I said, is this one of the 7? And I was told, yes, indeed, this is one of the 7. And when we're together, it's as though we are in this beautiful, divine energy. It is so sublime. And the way the energy moves between us is just, you know, I call it the sweeties. You know the people in your life where the energy just flows with such impeccability and it's so smooth and easy and wonderful. I feel that Michelle and I have this wonderful, easy flowing energy between us. And those that we call friends, do we not feel that easy flow of energy? That's divine. That's the divine moving through us, expressing through us, allowing us to experience the depth and breadth of what it is to be fully human and fully divine, how we experience that. Now, I have a being who lives inside me, and her name is Mamma Mia. And Mamma Mia loves to eat. She loves to eat everything on the planet. And she doesn't care what it is. She said, let me have that. I want it now. I say to her, Mamma Mia, be calm, darling. We're going to have something you're not really wild about right now. Because if I ate what Mamma Mia wanted me to eat, it would be very difficult for me to feel what I feel. So I honor that she's in there, and she's been in there all my lifetime. And my mother was a very good cook. And when you're young, you can eat everything, right? At least that was my experience. And then when I started dancing, here was the rule. You either eat to live or live to eat. And dancers eat to live. They want to live. They want to dance with such a fervor that, you know, it's just like, you know, just a little, ta-da, ta-da, you know, here I am. It's fantastic. So I learned that the divine through me had created Mamma Mia so that I could appreciate all the different kinds of food that I would eat upon the earth plane. And I've traveled, had the great privilege of traveling to many countries and working in many different countries and eating many different kinds of food and acknowledging that that too is divine, that every country is manifesting its divinity in the most remarkable ways, in the clothing they wear, in the food that they eat, in the way that they are with each other. When I was in Japan, when you're in Brazil, you have the lasso. You can't compare them. The men hug it, women hug it, everybody hugs it. It's wonderful. You go to Italy. And in Italy, they don't say bye, they go ciao. The hand is this way. It's so sweet. All the different cultures have these wonderful ways of expressing the divine which they are. And we can call it culture, and we can call it food, and we can call it whatever we call it. But the truth is that it's all a manifestation of this extraordinary divine consciousness in which we live and have our being every single moment. And when we sleep, how many people love their bed besides me? Thank you! Okay. I love my bed. And I can't wait to get in my bed. And I go, oh, bed, you're so wonderful. Oh, who could have dreamt that it could be so great? And I love my pillow. And I love everything about it, you know. I love my sheets. I love my blanket. And when I get ready to get in the bed, I just go, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because this is so divine. And I feel like I'm moving into what I would call the womb of the Divine Mother. I'm just going into that place of complete quiet and darkness and being covered and nurtured and held for the time that I sleep. I feel as though the Divine Mother has taken me in her arms and said, sleep now, and tomorrow awaken, and another day the Divine and you will be together. I mean, it's just remarkable. And what about your dream life? I mean, I'm assuming everybody has a dream life, even if you don't remember it. at least everybody dreams, yes? I hope. Okay, very important. Because the dream life, yes, there are many people who would say, you know, it's part of the unconscious and the subconscious and whatever you're worrying on or whatever you're bringing into your life or whatever you're leaving behind. And all of it is wonderful and symbolic. And if you have the opportunity to remember your dreams, it's also a very great practice because that too is divine. Your dreams have a great divine consciousness. And if you acknowledge that divinity is moving through you every moment, there's no moment that's not divine. And when we pass from this earth plane into the formless, we're just going into more divinity, darlings. The soul is infinite, eternal, ongoing, and forever. Your soul never ceases to exist. Just because this earth plane body falls away doesn't mean that the divinity which you are ceases. On the contrary, you simply let go of this costume that you chose for this embodiment. You let it go. And then the soul, which has been enjoying this embodiment, goes into the formless. And then when you're on the other side, you're going to have a lot of fun because we all go have a lot of fun over there. And we talk about, shall we embody again or shan't we embody again? And you may not believe that you reincarnate, and that's perfectly okay. That's a wonderful belief to have, that you just have the one time. Make the most of it. If that's what you believe, be sure you make the most of it. Do not be missing a stitch, okay? Because at the end, you don't want to say, oh my God, I missed a stitch. No, you want to say, oh my God, I had a wonderful embodiment this time. I loved and I laughed and I had a Mamma Mia who loved to eat. It's fine. I love the fact that I have a gift, which is to see in the formless. And I can see the souls there and I can help individuals make their transition to the other side. And I also assist in souls who are coming into the embodiment. So knowing what awaits us on the other side is a great joy to me. And I honor that all that we experience in this embodiment, every moment, every breath, every blink of our eye, every word we speak, every movement we take, there is nothing, nothing that is not in that divine consciousness. Now, we've been taught in certain parts of our society, this and this and this you don't do, and this you do do. And we get to choose. We get to choose. I'll take a little of that. And maybe I'll take a little of that. And maybe I'll take a little of that. We have this plethora of all that is right here upon the earth plane. And we may choose moment to moment that which we will bring in and that which we will not. That which we will let go of after we outgrow it. I mean, there were things that I had to outgrow. You know, I was really attached to a lot of stuff. And I said, do I really need that in my life now? And the answer was, you may choose. Do you need it or don't you need it? I grew up in a family where there was, it was very, very disciplined, extreme disciplinarians, both my mother and my father. And with good reason, we were wild. We wanted to get away with murder, but not quite. And I know that's not familiar to anybody here in this room. So, you know, we had to toe the mark and toe the line and, you know, all that jazz. And, boy, I couldn't wait to leave. Couldn't wait to leave. Anybody else like that? I said, where is the next train out of Dodge? I said, I want to be on that train. And, of course, as an artist, I was always expressing myself. And, you know, I was drawing and painting and dancing and, whew. And the rest of the family, they're extraordinary intellectuals and brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I will honor, I'm brilliant, but in a different way. And so we would have these wonderful discussions about everything, didn't make any difference what it was. We were always talking about whatever it was. And I would leave these discussions and I would go, wow, you know, all that's really interesting. And it fed me on one level. But what I really wanted to feel was, what is it like to just be able to open your heart and encompass the whole world, all of the earth, within my heart? Could I possibly expand the consciousness of my heart to do that, to hold everyone and everything and Gaia, beloved Mother Earth, in my heart? Is that possible? And the answer is yes. We have this extraordinary capacity to expand our consciousness to hold anything and everything that we choose. I work on the inner and on the outer with all the conflicts that are happening on the earth plane. And I speak of these things to you because if you ever choose to do this work, it is the work, and we do it because of the love that we have for the earth and humanity. And wherever there is conflict, I ask that my heart and the radiance of love, which is divine, move and encompass every single conflict that's on the earth plane. And if it is possible that that conflict be resolved, then I pray that that is so. And if it is not in divine order that that conflict be resolved, for it is on the earth plane for some reason, a reason I may never know until I leave this earth plane. But that is not what I'm doing. What I'm doing is asking that my heart and the love which I am embrace every conflict and embrace all of Gaia, the totality of who she is and what she is and the magnificence that she is. Within our consciousness, within our spiritual body, there is every potential to bring love to everything. And it is only we who decide whether we will do that or not. And some things we've been told, that's bad. We don't love that. And this was a huge thing for me to break through. Because I had really been taught, here's good, here's bad. Bad, you don't love that. And I had to come to the realization within myself that if I were going to truly love, I would need to have my love embrace everything. Now remember that everything on the earth plane is illusion, darlings. This is just a dream that we're all communally dreaming. It's not really real. It's just an illusion. And once you have that knowing, it appears so real. You really look real to me. And so do you. Oh my, are you an illusion? Truly. But isn't this wonderful? That at the same moment, you see, remember, we learn through polarities. Here's the polarity that everything is illusion, and here's the other side that everything looks so solid. Yes? But it is all illusion. Every single bit of it. So, when something comes unto me and people say, I cannot love that, I say, I'll love that. I will love that. And perhaps, if we in this room were to love everything without good, bad, right, or wrong, those illusional polarities that exist, if we could just love completely, then the polarities would begin to melt away. And those things that we have judged to be good, bad, right, wrong, they melt away. And what is left is the deep knowing that love, the love who we are, the love that we are in every cell of our body, and every body, whether it is our spiritual body, our mental body, our emotional body, our physical body, this is love manifest. Now we can take care of it. We can take care of it. This is our gift. One of the great gifts is that we have a physical body and we can experience these extraordinary things. And at the same time, we are not our bodies. We're not our bodies, darling. We're something else entirely. And yet, to hold that and to be able to just do what we do. What is your job? What are your relationships? What is your family? What are your likes and dislikes? How do you move energy during the day, you know? When is your high point in the day and when is your low point? What are your biorhythms? How do you work in the world? And when you sleep, do you awake refreshed or are you exhausted? And what happens when you feel some extraordinary energy moving through you and you hardly know what to do with yourself and you just bring it in and you let it be who you are? Have you never seen anything that has inspired you or touched you with such beauty that you thought you just had to lie down to experience it? I mean, I have seen beauty on this earth plane, and I walk every day in the morning, and the birds are singing, and I don't care if it's foggy or the sun is shining, it is so beautiful. And I say to the birds, thank you for accompanying me on my walk, and the songs that you are singing are so wonderful. I mean, how can you ever ask? I mean, we live in paradise here, darlings. I mean, this is paradise. And so once you know you're in paradise, then the love, it seems to me, would be even more extraordinary. Now, if someone put me in the desert, I would say, okay, I'm here in the desert. How do I love this? How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. And I would say, I'm going to find a way to love being in the desert. Of course we would. And sometimes in our emotional life, it does feel like a desert. I've been through that. Felt like a desert. Yeah, tough, hard, wasn't easy. But I came through that desert, and I found that knowing. I had a vision where there was a great desert, and I was standing in the desert, and I was completely naked. And I realized that that was the illusion, that the illusion is really like that desert where there's nothing. And I was standing there. And I said to the divine, how shall I move from this place? Just standing here in this utter, extraordinary, vast desert. And the divine said, I will move your foot. And I felt my foot moving. And the divine said, I will move you through this desert, through this illusion, and you will know the way, because every step will be with me. And I said, show me how to do that. That's all that I want, is to be able to have my life be moved by that God presence within me, moved by that love which is within me. And I would not move until I knew that that was what I was to do. That movement, that word, that thought, that feeling, whatever it happened to be. I had to practice surrender. I have a huge personal will. I came in with the will to do what I do, but I had to balance that my personal will with my God will. Do you know what I'm saying? The God will is a very powerful energy, and all of us can access it whenever we choose. But in order to do that, we have to align the personal will with the God will. And often, because I was very willful as a child, I'd get in all kinds of trouble. And, you know, my parents would say, there she goes again. She's the one. There she goes again. She's doing blah, 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 you know? And they would, through their discipline of me, you know, try to bring that energy into some level of alignment so that I could experience, instead of the being willfully thrusting myself into the world, that I would bring that will more and more into alignment. Does anybody have that experience? I hope so. I hope so. This is very important. Because once you understand that your little will is coming into alignment with a much greater will, then something else can happen. And when my energies began to come together like this, then I could feel, all right, I'm in an alignment now that I can hold and that will serve me. So when the divine says, this is the next movement, I wouldn't say, oh, I don't know if I like that. No. I think you made a mistake. I think maybe we ought to go the other way, like over here. No, darling. I maybe tried that twice. And I said, no, Mary, you won't be a happy camper. We do not say we're not going to go there. If the divine says this is the path, then this is the path, okay? So there's both surrender, aligning the will with the God will, and then, this is the big one, to have the self-discipline to step forward, and then whatever is asked, to do it. Whatever is asked to do it. The first time I was asked to be with someone who was dying, I said, I don't know if I can do this. And the divine said, this is the next great teacher. Death is your next great teacher. And you will learn from death what you have not been able to learn from life. And you are to go and be with death and be with it until you have fallen in love with death. And I said, I will do this. And so my experience, and at one point there were five individuals who were all dying at the same time here in Santa Barbara, and my day was spent going from home to home or hospice or hospital or wherever they were. And at the same time, my mother was getting ready to make her passage back on the East Coast. And it was an extraordinary time for me. And to watch how each one was moving with death, whether they were resisting it, or whether they were surrendering, or whether they were in denial, it was every permeation of what could happen knowing that you were going to die. And as would happen, my mother, the hospital had called and said, your mother, it appears your mother's going to be dying, please come. And there was a very dear friend of mine who was in her passing. And I said, I'm not going to be with you. I'm sorry, my mother is passing and I feel I need to go and be with her. And while I was gone, this beloved friend did pass and I went to be with my mother. And here is the wall between where her bed was in the critical care and the waiting room. And I arrived late in the afternoon, and the doctor said, we don't know if she'll make it through the night. And all of my siblings had come and gone. My father had since passed over. And I lay down on the floor on this connecting wall, and I just prayed through the night that if I was to be with her in her passing, that I would, in the morning, I'd be able to go in and be with her. And if she chose to pass in the night, that I would be holding the energy for her right here, right this little wall right here. That didn't mean anything. I was actually in the room with her, but my physical body was in this place, separate from her. And the next morning, the doctor came in and he said, you can see your mother now. And he didn't seem to be disturbed or upset. And I thought, oh, okay. And I walked in, and my mother was radiant. And she was so full of life. And she said, Mary. And I said, Mother. I said, Mom, what happened to you? I mean, the light that was coming off her body was extraordinary. And she said, come here. And I sat on the edge of her bed. She said, Mary, this most extraordinary thing happened to me last night. I said, what happened, Mom? And she said, you won't believe it. And I said, yes, I'll believe it. I had done a lot of work by this time. And she said, your father came to me and he sat on the bed right where you are and he talked to me about his experience that he was having on the other side. And she said, his anger was gone and he was completely at peace. And he told me about the experience that he had had once he passed to the other side, that he could release his anger finally. And she said, is that true? Did it really happen? I said, Mother, that is more real than this room. And she said, will I remember it? I said, actually, you will not. I said, the time will come, and as you get well, that curtain will drop or close, and you'll get back to being in your body the way you were before. But I said, I will remember this for you. And any time you want to hear what actually happened, I will share with you what you have said to me this night so that you will remember that. And she said, I've been afraid to die. And I said, Mother, why are you afraid to die? And she said, because I was afraid that your father would still be an angry man. And I said, you see, Dad came to tell you that he is no longer angry, that he is at peace, so that now you can pass in peace, and you will be with him, and it'll be just fine. Now, all of us can pass in peace if we choose, or not. And the experiences I've had have taught me that in my day, I want peace. I want love, light, peace, and joy, those four things. And anyone in any order will do, but that's where I live. And if there is something that is out of alignment with any of these four, then I sit down and I say, help me know what this is. I want to release it. I want to release it. For what need of I have anything that is less than love, light, peace, and joy. And having seen the transformation that my mother went through was astounding. And when the time came for her to pass, which was several months later, I was with her. She died at home. And the nurse had said, I think she's going to leave tonight. And all my siblings by that time had left. They'd all come to say goodbye. And I was able to get on the bed with her and hold her. And I said to the nurse, I said, do you sing? She said, not much. And I said, well, why don't we just sing? Because everybody, I think, maybe at least in this American culture, knows Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Mm. So I said, why don't we sing Sweet Low to Mom while she's getting ready to leave? So we all, the nurse and I sang, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Hallelujah. All right. So she made her beautiful transition. And the look of her, she was like a young girl again. And we changed her clothes and arranged her on the bed. And I called all my siblings, and they all came. And they said, she's not dead. I said, actually, she is. She looked absolutely amazing. And the light, and you know, I mean, I was astounded. So they all walked in, and they all said, she's not dead. I said, well, come and look at the lividity. You know, when you pass, the blood settles, and you can see the lividity, the darkening of the skin. And so we pulled the covers back, and sure enough, I said, Mom's gone. It was profound. And I thought to myself, isn't it wonderful that in the passing there is still the presence of that love for those who come to see and have the eyes to see the love that is there. Even though the soul has passed, the body can still hold that beautiful radiance of love. So I'm saying these things because sometimes we forget that our life is so precious. We get so busy doing, we just get absorbed in the doing and forget about the being. If the day begins in our being, then the rest of the day will have a very different energy. If we wake up, and I used to do this, how many things do I have to do today? Oh my, this, and I would do my recitation of my list. Anybody else do that? Mm-hmm. I've got to do this. Now, I've got to do it this time because I can't do it at that time because this time is better because then I can do three more things over here because, And I'm a very good choreographer. I can choreograph anything. You tell me these two horses have to get over there, I will choreograph it. It makes no difference what it is. And I was completely absorbed in that activity, which had absolutely nothing to do with being. Now I wake up in the morning and I say, thank you, I love you, and I will now move in being. I do my practice in the morning, my spiritual practice. I have a quiet time. I love on my dog. I love on my beloved man, my sweetheart, my Michelle. I enjoy the day, and I do business. I do a lot of business. I have a lot of business to do. But I don't have to do it the way I used to do it, with urgency. The hallmark of the ego is urgency. And if you have urgency, then that's where you're living. And that's okay, because that will be a great teacher to you, just as death was a great teacher to me. And I do not look at my life and say, what is there that I am to learn? Everyone is my teacher. There's not a person that I've met on the planet, nor any of you sitting in this room. You, even though you have not spoken a word, each of you has been teaching me. Your energy has been teaching me some very sublime, very subtle energies, but I have been listening even as I have been speaking. And whoever I meet, I ask as I meet them, whether it is for a split second or for a lifetime, they are my teacher, and what are they teaching me? And I want to be present for the teaching.